This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Dr. Mark Kermode is here. You can follow us all week, and what fun it is. You go to twitter.com and you search for Wittertainment. 5,500 followers, can't be wrong. Well, there might be. Gary Lightbody is here, just finishing up with Gary. Loads of emails. Apologies for the kind of disjointed nature of this conversation. You know your movies. Number of people saying... that you know your films, and you're a bit of a fan?
I'm a film fan. I'm a fan of this man to my right here, actually.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah, for those not watching, that means Dr. K.
Yes.
Oh, he's gesturing towards Mark Cousins, that's the point.
So, yeah, no, I do love my movies.
Favourite film of all time?
Oi, that's a good... I don't know. Childhood had a lot to do with it, but probably Empire Strikes Back, to be honest.
You see, and there we go. And the brief but wonderful relationship that we were having, just crashes and burns.
I know. But that's just because it's probably the most watched film, and it looms large in my
mind. It is true that there is definitely, because when I was at Radio 1, which seems like ages and ages ago, they did this thing about...
That's because it was.
It was ages ago. And they did this thing about poll of what people's favourite movies were. And Star Wars got... it won. And it got something like twice the number of votes of The Godfather, and it was clearly an age delineation thing. I was just too old for Star Wars, so by the time Star Wars was out on video, I was too old, and it just didn't never kind of work for me. And I remember, so quiet you could hear the sound of a name drop, I remember Robbie Williams being in Radio 1 attempting to explain to me what it was about Star Wars, and ending up just concluding, you're just too old for it. And the fact is, I think he's probably right. I was born at the wrong point. You see, I like my sci-fi dystopian. I like Silent Running. I like Solaris. I like 2001. I don't like things exploding in outer space and blokes dressed as walking, carpets.
Let's just go through some...
I like all those as well. But there we go.
You're just probably more open-minded than I am, I think. That's the point. Can't you say, I'm sure you've done this already, but are Snow Patrol named after Snow Patrol? The film Snow Patrol?
No.
Okay, fine.
No.
Just checking.
No, it was an accident. It was a bizarre accident.
What happened in this accident?
They accidentally got named Snow Patrol.
Well, that's pretty much it. But a mate, we were called Polar Bear, and a mate said, thought that we were called Snow Patrol. I don't know how, but he'd made it up in his own head.
Appreciate you coming in, and wish you all the best for the tour starting in Bournemouth next weekend.
Can you stay for the top 10?
Absolutely. Well, can you stay for the top 10? Then you can interject. Right, that's a very good idea from the doctor. So we'll do next.
And that's a novelty.
So we're going to try and do the box office top 10. Mark Kermode is here. Gary Lightbody is here. He knows his films, but do you go and see them?
Yeah.
If we go through the top 10, you may well have seen some of these.
Hopefully.
Very good.
Let's go through. So Mark goes first, and then you chip in, Gary. Even if you haven't seen the film, you've just got an opinion.
Blindly shouted over the top.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you very quickly, when I was at the BAFTAs, I met Jason Isaacs. Hello, Jason Isaacs.
Disappointed, by the way, as were the Twitterers, that Jason Isaacs walks on and he doesn't say hello back to us.
No, I know. Actually, I should have picked him up on that. But anyway, he was great and he was very nice, and he introduced me to Hermione Granger, which was great. Emma Watson, as she's known to other people.
In real life.
But yeah, Hermione Granger. And I said, you must come back on the show, because he was meant to be coming back and he didn't. And he said, the thing was that when we did that top 10 run, it wasn't until I was in the studio that I realised that I actually couldn't say probably what I want it, because it's people, and that is true. It's a terrible thing about, you get people in who work in the film, you ask them to comment on the top 10 releases, they are sort of obliged to not hold forth. So I'm just hoping. So you do have no investment in the film industry, do you?
No.
Fine, speak your mind in that case. Good.
Okay. Here we go. So that's a good story. Thanks, Mark.
And he said hi to you too.
What did Emma say?
She said, "You're who?" No, because she said, "Can I have your autograph for my kids?" And she went, "Yeah." She was really nice, actually. She was really, really friendly. Because that must have been the umpty thrumptieth time that evening that happened to her. So it was she was very pleasant.
Box office top 10, then, with Mark going first and Gary chipping in. It's Doubt at number 10.
There's been a lot of discussion on the internet about our review of Doubt, which we ended by saying that we were in agreement as to whether or not he was guilty, but we didn't want to say whether he was, because we didn't want to spoil people's enjoyment.
Yeah, we wanted a more enigmatic ending.
Yeah, well, apparently we weren't enigmatic enough, because people said, yeah, but it's quite clear what they thought, so that's like giving the end away anyway.
All right. Oh, sorry about that.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
And?
Yeah. And I'm not giving away the end.
No, okay, but, right, but don't you think, regardless of which way you think it goes... Don't you think that it does clearly come down on one side of the... fine, okay. Yeah. So there we go. So that is the essential problem with it, is that despite the sort of the fine performances and all the rest of it, it is too theatrical. And in the end, it's not doubtful enough. I wanted more doubt. You know, even though it ends with Muriel Strepsil saying, "I'm so full of doubt," you go, "Yeah, but unfortunately, the film isn't."
So we've got £7 at nine.
And if you haven't yet been to see £7, and I've been very good about holding back from saying, "Have you seen £7?"
I haven't seen it.
Okay,
I was told not to bother.
It's described by Nick Thornsby here on this as an hour and a half of Will Smith being mysterious in order to get an Oscar.
Yeah, exactly. And although he hasn't done it, so here's the thing, right? The film's called £7, right? We're not allowed to tell you what the £7 is, but it's something that he's involved in. £7. What can it be? What's the mysterious thing that Will Smith can be looking at him at? It's about £7. Now, off the top of your head, without seeing the film, have a wild guess at what it might be.
I don't know how much the weight he lost for the role. I don't know.
Well, maybe it's more mysterious than perhaps I've been letting on in that case.
So we have role models at number eight.
James King, I had yet another confrontation with James King in a cinema about this. And I said, I still can't believe that you said genius, blah, blah, blah. And he said, "Oh, well, for heaven's sake, get over it, because everyone's agreeing with me. Everyone's saying that it is really funny."
I don't think they are.
No, apparently, according to James, he's living in some alternate universe in which everybody thinks role models is absolutely jam-packed with laughs and is genius. Seen it?
I love Paul Rudd, so I'm going to see it. Definitely. I haven't seen it yet.
No, well, Paul Rudd came on the programme. He was perfectly nice. Film stank. And funnily enough, he sort of talked about it in a way that kind of implied that he thought it stank, because he didn't really want to talk about the film, did he?
No, he didn't. The Secret of Moonacre at seven.
Well, I want to like The Secret of Moonacre, but I don't. And it's a real shame, because what I really want is I want more intelligent kids' fantasy films, sort of strong, you know, young girl leads, because, you know, I've got a daughter and I want that. And I really wanted Secret of Moonacre to be that. But it's, you know, it's a fantasy film with the girl out of Golden Compass with a fantastical lion. And a lot of you just, I mean, I'm sorry, you actually would no longer make a film with a fantastical lion in the wake of Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe and the Narnia movie. You just wouldn't do it. So you stand there. The only things I thought was, first, it's a shame because it is Narnia light, 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 and Narnia was actually Lord of the Rings light anyway. And the second thing is, Tim Curry has turned into, what's the name of that guy that married Liza Minnelli?
David Guest.
Yeah. Tim Curry, who was
one of our
so
favourite
fantastic
guests on
as Frankenfurter, was he?
Well, some people were of the opinion he's the worst guest we've ever had.
Yes, other opinions are available.
He was charming, enigmatic, entertaining, and wished we'd had him on for longer.
Well, I just think it's some kind of divine wrath that Tim Curry, you know, begins his screen career as Frankenfurter out of Rocky Horror, and he ends up looking like David Guest in a sub-Narnia movie.
You can't really have anything other than a lion, though. You can't really have a panda. You have a tiger, maybe.
They have got a panda. No, you can. There's loads of other things.
Just a giraffe.
Well, maybe. No, a giraffe's not going to work. No, but there are other noble creatures other than lions. And then there's a unicorn that appears to have walked off the set of Legend. And standing next door to Tim Curry, who, of course, famously was a tandoori chicken in one of those. So anyway, never mind.
Hey, well, listen, we're only at six. My Bloody Valentine.
A much better date movie than Friday the 13th in so many ways. And My Bloody Valentine is in 3D, so lots of things point out of the screen at you. And if you're taking your date to see a Valentine, old principle of horror movies, you take somebody to see it, they get scared, they leap into your arms, you comfort them. More chance of that happening,
right,
with pointy things coming out the screen.
Gary, you seen that?
No, I'm not really mad keen on horror.
No.
Not mad keen.
The gulf between us is growing.
No, but not like, is it gory horror? Because there's a big difference. I like the psychological horror stuff, but I don't like the gory. No.
Take a wild swing at whether My Bloody Valentine in 3D
I'm imagining
is gory
it's
or
gory,
it is.
Yeah.
It's eyeballs.
But according to many of our listeners,
the worst thing you could do for a date
is go and see Revolutionary Road, because there was a listener who pointed out a couple of weeks ago that all the worst elements of a relationship, which you've written about over many years, Gary. Everything that is bad about being in a relationship is in one movie.
It is. And it's not a particularly fantastic movie either. It's just a very average movie. Are we on to Revolutionary Road?
Yeah, that's why I mentioned it.
It is, I have to say, rather average. I still think it's a better movie than The Reader. And I think it has more, you know, more reason to be up there in a best film category than The Reader does. I mean, I think Kate Winslet is very good in both of those films, although in The Reader she has to talk in a funny German accent, which she doesn't really pull off very well. But it's terribly average, and as people who've seen Mad Men, you know, will know, it is Mad Men without the gags.
Have you seen that, Gary?
No.
Have you seen Valkyrie?
Valkyrie? Yeah, no, yeah. Not yet. I haven't seen Valkyrie yet.
Well, but Valkyrie's interesting because, I mean, everybody said it was rubbish at first, but actually it's not rubbish. It's a Bryan Singer movie. It's perfectly all right. There is the accent problem, which is that they've said that nobody's going to have any accent. So Tom Cruise is doing American. You know, everybody else is doing English, all the English, except for Eddie Izzard, who's doing a kind of weird, slightly Bavarian, slightly Werner Herzog-y inflected thing. But actually, as a straightforward nuts and bolts boys' own thriller, particularly considering that you know what happens in the end, mm-hmm. is they don't kill Hitler, it's actually quite, you know, quite... Have I given the end away?
I think you've done it again, haven't you?
I think you were there with that. Now, you must have seen Slumdog.
Yes.
Slumdog
yes.
Millionaires at number four. What did you think, Gary Lightbody?
I thought it was fantastic, but it's not the feel good hit that everyone was talking about. It's more it's a lot of
Slumdog tough, before the Millionaire.
It's a tough road to get to the happy ending.
No, because the thing is, I think you can
give it another.
You
million
know,
away.
You can quite rightly claim in the case of them because actually the picture on the poster is of him and her standing together with money or confetti falling down all around them. So the whole implication of it being called anything Millionaire is you kind of assume that that's what happens in the end, which is, I think, is a terrible thing to put in the publicity. Plus, as we all know, the whole idea of marketing it as a feel-good movie was entirely because the film company thought the Danny Boyle fans are going to go anyway. What we need to get is the Mamma Mia fans. And I do sit there thinking, you know, halfway through, when it's child abuse and kidnapping and torture and, you know, all that stuff, they are going to be sitting there thinking, when am I going to start feeling good? And because you do feel good at the end, but you feel good because it's a good film, not because it doesn't even end on a particularly, you know, I know it ends on a song and dance because that's a dramatic construct at the end of any of the film.
Yes. We're just very late, so we're just cracking on here. Keeping Gary's. He's got albums to sign, places to open.
No, he's not. He's in
places to open. Yes,
Matt on this email, Simon, about your correspondent last week who claimed that Mark was wrong in calling Slumdog Squarepants a fable instead of a parable was in fact
wrong.
A parable is an allegorical story designed to teach a hidden meaning, whereas a fable is a story about supernatural or extraordinary events not necessarily depicted by children or animals. In fact, it was only Aesop who made a practice of doing that. I strongly believe Slumdog falls into the latter, but correct me if I'm wrong.
So can I have fable back again? Because literally, as I went up the red carpet going into the BAFTAs, see how I knew that, people were shouting from the side. They weren't shouting, they were shouting, "It's a parable!" I mean, I was being heckled satirically by people I'd never met.
There have been fights and gangs fighting over this.
It was weird.
We say it's a parable, we say it's a fable, let's have a fight.
That's like a future I want to be involved in. People fighting over the English language.
If you're waiting for the travel, travel's coming up. However, number two, he's just not that into you.
And I'm
he's
not,
just not in that.
He's just not that into you.
He's just not that into you. Oh, I don't know on the emphasis there. Where does the emphasis go?
Well, I think it's he's just not that into you.
We could have a fight over the English language in one corner and a fight over pronunciation of this film in another. Mm. He's just not that into you.
Well, the conversation that you've just had is more interesting than the film. It's yet another one
fantastic
of those.
Fantastic cast.
Right, yeah, it is, but it's yet another one of those things in which you go, okay, fantastic, like underperforming hugely. And if there is something about, what's she called? Jennifer Thingy Bob.
Connelly?
Jennifer Aniston, like Jennifer Connelly is there as well. That she's oddly televisual. I mean, she just can't do films. There aren't... Name for me a great Jennifer Aniston movie.
A Good Girl.
It's not a great movie.
It's not a bad movie.
It's a television film.
Anyway...
It's a television film.
Okay, well, maybe. We'll argue about that after.
It's the Curious Case of Ben Button at number one. Anyway, that'll do. So listen, it's been really good, Joe. Thanks for hanging around. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
All the best for the tour. Unless you want to keep him for a little bit longer, Mark.
No,
been very good. Gary, you've been a good guest. Thanks very much indeed. It's been a long time you've been in this studio.
It's been an absolute pleasure. It really has.
Just ahead of our first review, John BSC Arch. Dear Curiouser and Curious.
Arch. Must be architecture.
I know, but it's A-R-C-H.
Or archaeology. Obviously,
or archaeology.
So I'm sorry. It's Arch.
I know. It just says, you know, let's not get hung up. Dear Curious and Curious, last weekend I struck a bargain with my wife that she'd come with me to see Benjamin Button if I'd go with her to see He's Just Not That Into You. I rather enjoyed Benjamin Button, it being reasonably interesting and a technical marvel. However, it is exactly what it claims to be in the title, a curious tale, nothing more, nothing less. I struggle to shower any praise on He's Just Not That Into You. It's a poorly made, whining Hollywood version of Love Actually. Whilst it did manage the merest hint of a tug at my heartstrings, that was only after I'd been forced to sit through 2 hours of inane whinging by most of a thoroughly average cast. Keep up the good work. Anyway, so that's a bit of Ben, but lots and lots of emails about Benjamin Button, which we might be able to get to. However, we do need to do the odd review at some stage before four.
Well, shall we start with something that both you and I saw?
Notorious.
Yeah, but not the Hitchcock film, which by a really odd coincidence was reissued a couple of weeks ago. So
that
when people were saying, have you seen Notorious? I said, yes, I've seen Notorious, but not that one. The story of Notorious B.I.G. And now, to some extent, my only familiarity with this story was through the Nick Broomfield documentary, Biggie and Tupac. That is pretty much all I know about it. And I should say, right from the off, I do have a complete tin ear for the music. So that's not the fault with the music. It's a fault with, it's not something that that works for me. Anyway, it is the story about how he became a great, if very brief-lived, rap star and goes back to his early childhood beginnings. Here's a clip.
You still hustling? So you don't get it twisted. I'm not against making money. My business is about the streets, but my business ain't in the streets. And I can't be building nothing around no artists and get locked up any minute.
I'm saying, if you got real paper coming my way, I'm out the game.
Don't chase the paper, chase the dream. I started off as Andre Harrell's assistant. Now I'm damn near running this place. You know what I'm saying? I'm hungry. You can throw me butt naked in the jungle and I'll come out with a chinchilla coat, a leopard hat, and 10 pounds heavier from eating them.
With all due respect, Puff, dreams ain't paying the bills, Jay. His do. Puffy, I don't know about a chinchilla, but if you throw me out to the jungle, I had him dancing. Maybe in the right hands, I could be like one of the greatest.
How old are you?
19.
By the time you're 21, I'll make you into a millionaire.
What's up? What's up? What's up? I rang my daughter and said, coming out of that movie, I rang her and said, what's up, what's up? She just thought I was so toe-curlingly embarrassing.
So not got any friends.
Stupid middle-aged man.
For the record,
being a rapper.
Jamal Woolard and Derek Luke as Biggie Smalls and Sean Puffy Coombs. Isn't he now P. Diddy?
Yeah.
Puff Daddy. Well, okay. So here are the nice stuff about the film first is I think that the central performance seems pretty convincing. I mean, apparently the guy, you know, studied all of the songs and learnt them all word perfect and did a lot of voice training. And I mean, I
thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, it is. I'm as I said, the nice stuff first. I think that's a perfectly decent performance. I mean, that's good. The problems are much bigger. The problems are numerous. Firstly, you get Angela Bassett playing Biggie Smalls' mum, right? And Biggie Smalls' mum is involved at a production level in the film. So from the beginning, you're kind of certain that it's going to be a fairly rose-tinted portrait, despite the fact that it does the drugs and all that kind of stuff. It does, you know, it sort of says, oh, he was a street kid and did a bunch of bad stuff. The bad stuff is never really actually that bad, or at least the movie doesn't seem to think of it as that bad. It seems to think that, you know, well, hey, this is what happened, you know, but actually he was great and terrific. Now, the problem is that in order to convince me that the story is really, really interesting, I have to have something that convinces me that what he did was great and terrific for somebody who doesn't get the music. And it was interesting. I had a conversation with Lauren Laverne about this, who's, you know, who is down with the kids and understands pop music. And I said, look, tell me before I go and see the film, it's a really big deal. She said, no, he was. There's a record, is it called Hypnotize?
What, by Def Leppard?
No, by Biggie Smalls.
Yeah, probably. I could sing in Def Leppard.
You're the music guy.
Yeah, well, you know.
Okay, well,
to an extent. I don't seem to remember playing a lot of Notorious.
Well, apparently there is a recommendation. She said, no, it's really good. And I remember the first time I ever heard it, thinking it was really great and really important. I respect Lauren's opinion very much on that. So I am willing to believe, therefore, that there is a great, significant musical career. The problem with it is that the film didn't give me any sense of what it was that I was meant to be impressed by. And I would say that if you didn't like rock and roll but you saw the Buddy Holly story, you would still come away from it with that sense, that moment when Gary Busey says, I've got a sound in my head and it's nothing like the sound we've got out here, and he starts playing, they're playing in the roller rink, and you understand what it is that he's doing that's fundamentally different to everything that's gone before. If you don't like Johnny Cash, you can still watch Walk the Line and understand what it is about that music that's important. And the problem for me was, as somebody who doesn't get the music that Biggie Smalls was making, the documentary didn't take me any nearer to that. Second thing, and it's hagiographic because it's basically coming from a position of people who really, really liked him, which is fine. I mean, that's okay, but you need more than that. The second problem with it is that it's narrated by Biggie Smalls.
I instantly don't get that, because
no, well,
how can he narrate his own movie when he dies?
Well, of course, you know, on one level, you could say it's an homage to Sunset Boulevard, right? In which is, you know, there are several movies which are narrated from beyond the grave, but in this particular case, it's really odd because there's never, and you said this yourself, there's never a point at which he sits down and writes the story. So you're thinking either the whole thing is a complete construct, which is really weird because the construct is that he's narrating from beyond the grave, which is not going to sit easily, or he's written a memoir, which they haven't told me about, and when did it happen? Because the time between him, you know, where's the space in which he wrote the memoir? Okay, so that's a big problem. The problem beyond that even is that having seen the Broomfield documentary, Biggie and Tupac, about which I have reservations, although it, you know, there is an awful lot of information in there, there is the sense that the story of the East-West fight that's going on in the film, which apparently everybody knows all about, is really, really not investigated in any sense at all.
I think the reason for that is, or one of the reasons will be, because when Valletta Wallace was on as Christopher Wallace's mother...
Biggie Smalls being Christopher Wallace, which I haven't said.
Exactly. I said, you know, can you explain, for those who don't really get the whole East Coast, West Coast, why it was so much of an issue, can you explain it? And she didn't want, either she didn't, couldn't, or she just didn't want to.
No.
Explain that. And so that's why it would appear to me the film doesn't really explain what on earth was going on, because she didn't want it to.
Fine, but what it does is it has a section in it which is so hokey, which kind of does a version of, look, hey... Biggie was completely the innocent party in all this. Now, I'm not saying for one minute that he wasn't, but what I'm saying is... No, I'm not. What I'm saying is the sequence was so hokey that you end up thinking, what are you covering up? Do you know what I mean? It's like if you do a really, really pantomime version of something in which it's literally, I'm just going to do everything that I can possibly do to be good and helpful. Oh, help! Someone's... You know, it just immediately makes you more suspicious. So there's a really peculiar thing going on in there, which is that the movie is so clumsy about stating innocence... that you start to wonder what it is that you're not getting. So, three things. It's hagiographic. It's narratively confused because it's the thing from beyond the grave. It shies away from the East-West thing, and when it actually puts its feet into the East-West divide thing, it completely messes it up. This is more than three, obviously. It doesn't explain the music to me. And I think worst of all, it is a succession of cliches that you've seen from other movies. But now I'm not saying it's rubbish.
Did he invent the cliche though? Did that whole
thing? No. It had to invent the cliche.
The cliche of the rapper, you know, with the drugs and the guns and all that. He was the start of that, wasn't he?
Well, put it this way: if he was the start of that, then there's nothing in the movie that told me that, because the sense that I got from the movie is just doing what everybody else did. Funnily enough, by accident, you've hit the nail on the head. Which is, that's exactly the problem, is that if there is this...
How fortunate I'm here.
...this thing here, then what it should have done is it should have drawn my attention to that,
so
but
the
it
question,
didn't.
If the question is, what's up, what's your answer?
No mash, Doc.
Don't say that again.
Okay. The expression on Mark's face would indicate that he's either chewing a wasp, he's been looking at the ground in Antigua, which is frankly extraordinary, or he's tried to Twitter.
No, people keep coming in and putting the keyboard in front of me to say. But the thing is, because I'm
joining, that's what.
No, but I'm speaking out loud. It's like two bits of your brain. You can talk out loud and write at the same time.
Multitask.
Is that what it's called?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, being scatterbrained is what it's called. I mean, I don't understand. That's the fundamental thing I don't get. I don't get the writing whilst doing something else. You've written stuff here whilst you were talking to your man.
It's rude. A number of people are saying it is so rude to Twitter while doing something else, for which I apologise.
Yeah, so all I'm saying is the reason I want to be quite clear about this. I'm not. It's because I'm talking to you. Okay. You have my full attention.
All right, maybe you'll Twitter at 4 o'clock.
Yes,
you'll
fine.
Do that. Okay. You can follow us all the way through the week, by the way, if you go to twitter.com and you look for Wittertainment, search Wittertainment, various updates and stuff just happening through the week.
When you say you can follow us, what you mean is...
It's me representing both of us.
Yeah, well, that's the way it is so often.
Max in Bath. I saw Bolt 3D last Saturday. Oh, yeah. Spent the first 20 minutes whispering about how Jaws 3D had better 3D
than this. No, it didn't.
Until the film was paused, the cinema manager came in and told the whole cinema to turn their glasses upside down, which resulted in the whole cinema as one going, oh, that's what it is. What are we going to do next?
Pink Panther 2,
in just a second, waiting for that. Dear Dr. Caligari and Cesare, this is Candida. Candida Tasman, PhD in molecular medicine, graduating on Tuesday, hugely excited about possibly being called doctor for the first time on air, particularly by the glorious Dr. Kermode.
What's her name? Candida?
Candida.
No, her second name.
Don't know. Oh, Tasman, there you go. Candida
yeah, the
Tasman.
One that you said out loud.
Dr. Before. Tasman.
That's it, right? You talk and read and Twitter at the same time, and that's what happens, okay?
Can't read. Dr. Tasman.
Tasman. So, hello, Dr. Tasman.
Dr. Tasman says, following Mark's... Oh, well, and hello to Jason, and hello to David Morrissey.
Yeah.
Hello to all members of Focus, ELO, Fairport Convention, Pentangle, and...
Charlotte from the Subways.
The Dubliners.
The Reform Comes at Angels. And somebody came up to me at the BAFTAs and said, you have to start saying hello to Paul Bettany. We did do that occasionally.
And Michael Sheen and the Straubs.
Yep.
Anyway,
mainly
she says,
Jason.
Following Mark's review, my husband and I went to see The Wrestler and thought it magnificent. A beautifully drawn, brutal but compelling movie with the two-dimensional father-daughter relationship the only weak component. As I have come to trust his opinion on such things, I'd like to ask his advice on a very important matter.
Mm-hmm.
I recently found in a second-hand shop a copy of Zombie Honeymoon, which I snapped up as a Valentine's Day present for my gorgeous, living, dead-loving husband. Looking up reviews on my return, it seems that its audience is utterly polarised, leaving me uncertain as to whether it's the best or worst zombie movie ever made. I will not have a chance to watch it before the big day. So, what does Mark think? Suitable gift for cherished lover or grounds for divorce?
You know, I'm going to fail you completely. I can't bring it to mind. I can't remember.
Zombie Honeymoon?
No, I honestly... I could make up an opinion about it, but I honestly can't remember. Zombie Lake, you know, Nazi zombies coming out of lakes, fine, but and I'm not going to lie to you. So here, you're about to embark on a voyage of discovery. And what would be very nice is after this has all happened, next week, send us a text or a
Twitter.
Well,
do it now.
Yes, and tell us whether you've... No, I was going to say to the good couple.
Oh, okay.
And tell us how it went. Are you still speaking or not?
Sorry, Dr. Candida, we've let you down. Anyway, let's do... I know we're a little late for this, but anyway, Pink Panther 2, I've seen the poster on the bus.
Yeah.
That looks bad.
You're already not laughing. Well, look, it's a peculiar thing that they start the Pink Panther, you know, with Steve Martin, took some staggering amount of money, despite the fact that I don't even think it was press screened. I think it was one of those movies that they kept away from the press for a long time. So now the fact that it took a lot of money means we're going to get another one. So story this time is Steve Martin, once again, stepping into the Pink Panther shoes. He is called in to be a member of a crack team who are on the trail of a thief. I think he's called the Tornado. And the Pink Panther is getting stolen, as is a whole bunch of other works of art. And it's people like Alfred Molina and Andy Garcia and, you know, famous people. Here's a clip.
Good day. I am Inspector Jacques Liseau of the French police.
Sono Vincenzo Rocara Squaragialupi Brancaleoni.
And your name?
Vincenzo Rocara Squaragialupi Brancaleoni.
Oh, that is your name. I thought you were ordering in Italian. Once again.
Vincenzo Rocara Squaragialupi Brancaleoni.
Vincenzo Rocara Brancaleoni.
I'm Kenji Matsudo.
Kinji Mazuto.
Randall Pepperidge.
Randall Pepperidge. And this is my associate, Gilbert Ponton, and this is Nicole. Nicole is here to service your needs, so feel free to use her in any way you wish. And now, there's a crime scene waiting. Oh, excuse me.
El Sino di Crimo.
That is not Italian, and I do speak English.
Oh, really? Prove it.
And all the problems are kind of inherent in that clip. I mean, the first one is that the French accent that he's doing isn't very funny. And it's a weird thing about him not saying his R's properly. Because it's not that the French say, so it's a very odd joke about a French accent. I mean, it's quite easy to take the mickey out of the French accent. It's not hard, but it's a peculiar way to have gone with it. The second thing is that I tried to look at this as basically being aimed at a very, very young audience, because the thing with the Pink Panther movies is they were of hugely variable stock anyway. I mean, some of the Pink Panther movies were quite funny, but some of them were really, really terrible. The best one, of course, was Shot in the Dark, the second one, which, of course, was written by William Peter Blatty, who wrote The Exorcist, and I'm not being funny about this. It had a proper screenplay, proper jokes. It was actually taken vaguely from a stage play anyway. And so it was a proper film. And then a lot of the other ones were a lot less funny. There's a one with Alan Arkin, which is actually very odd. And then later on, they tried to revive it with, what's he called, you know, hey, I love you, hey, Jackpot, Roberto Benigni. It's Roberto Benigni, yes. Yeah. And so there, it's not like there's a great high watermark that you're having to hit every time we're doing a Pink Panther movie, but there are certain things that you have to do, and the original Pink Panther movies didn't play to a completely kiddie audience. With this, the humour is so sort of people falling on their bottoms orientated that you think, okay, fine, well, in that case, it's playing to a younger audience. But as that clip noticed, there's a kind of weird weird sexual innuendo going on all the way through it, which they refer to in the censors report. They give it a PG certificate, and they say that it is for mild sex reference and slapstick violence. They talk about the sex references in the Pink Panther 2 were felt to be limited to innuendo only and were infrequent. But the point is, if you're going to play to a very young audience, don't do the sort of innuendo smutty comedy which is inappropriate for that audience. And there's a whole subplot about Lily Tomlin being a PC cop who comes in to police political correctness, which is sort of is the setup for a lot of gags about Clouseau being leery. Now, in many of the, like, for example, in A Shot in the Dark, the Clouseau character was, you know, he was in love with a woman and it was quite lusty and bawdy, but that was never intended as a kid's movie. So the problem with this is they're not entirely sure who their audience is, point number one. Point number two, at a slapstick level, it's not anything like as funny as it ought to be, particularly considering how good Steve Martin is at slapstick. There's one sequence when he gets to dress up as a sort of singer-dancer and do a kind of flamenco-y thing. And, of course, if you know Steve Martin, if you've seen him on stage, he used to do brilliant tap dancing and banjo playing. He's a brilliant banjo player. And actually, one of the things that he does do really well is physical slapstick comedy. Now, maybe he's too old to do it, but there was this weird thing about you've got Steve Martin, you put him on, the whole setup is he's got to be a song and dance man, and then he doesn't actually do anything with it. And there's another scene in which there's a rack of wine, you've probably seen this clip, in which this rack of wine falls over and he's catching these wine bottles. And it's like a juggling trick, except the wine bottles are so terribly CGI that there's no physicality to it. So, the French accent's not funny, the innuendo is out of place, the slapstick humour doesn't utilise what it should have there. So what are you left with? You're left with, well, there's no plot to speak of because it's not written as well as Shot in the Dark was, because it doesn't actually have any real plot to speak of. And now, I'd be lying if I told you I didn't laugh at all, because even in that clip, there's a little smirky moment when he says, I'm blah, 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 and he says, oh, and then your name. And that's kind of, I mean, a couple of times I smirked, I tittered. I wasn't completely without laughter, and I was watching it thinking, if you had a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old, would they just laugh at the funny man falling over? In the same way as you'd laugh at the Chuckle Brothers on television, because, you know, Chuckle Brothers. No, I'm sorry.
You laugh at the Chuckle Brothers.
You do.
I don't think you do.
You do.
I don't even kids laugh at that.
Yes, they do.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm sorry.
I've got kids that are well brought up.
Right. My kids have laughed at the Chuckle Brothers.
My point, yes.
Yeah, fine. So all I'm saying is, right, it's not, I mean, it's certainly not, it's not a Norbit, it's not one of those, it's not grotesquely, you know, awfully offensive. It's just not doing any of the things that it ought to do, and it seems to be, it doesn't know who it's aimed at, and you just sit there thinking, I want to laugh now, please, can I just have a little laugh, a chuckle? What's that Woody Allen thing, which is, my wife left me on the grounds of insufficient laughter? Well, if you were married to the movie, you'd have the same issue.
Jeffrey on this, dear Raffer and Fergie, need your advice. What to watch with the missus on Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
I've drawn up a shortlist. Vicky and Christina, Barcelona.
Vicky Christina, Barcelona.
He's put in an and. Vicky Christina, Barcelona, terrible name.
Okay.
The Curious Case, Benjamin Button, she's just not that into you. She's not that into you.
That's going to be the sequel. She's so not into you.
That's the shortlist.
Yeah, fine. Vicky Christina, Barcelona.
And that's it, isn't it?
Yes, that is.
Dear Parable and Fable, according to my extensive research, says Mac Millings, a parable is a brief, succinct story in prose or verse that illustrates a moral or religious lesson. It differs from a fable in that fables use animals, plants, inanimate objects and forces of nature's characters. So, BAFTA red carpet crowd, heckle away. Marcus just tweeted.
Tweeted?
It's just there.
Is it?
It's a marvellous thing. Mark. Now, Mark's not going to be here next week because he can't be bothered, but you're going to be here immediately the Monday after that, where we've got an Oscar special.
That's right.
If you want Mark's Oscar predictions, Mark is going to tweet them in a few minutes' time.
Yeah.
Because we are going to run out of time.
Okay, fine.
So let's do an exciting new release, it being Friday the 13th and all.
So, Friday the 13th and all. A remake, or a reimagining, as they like to call them now, of the hit from 1980, directed by Marcus Nispel and, you know, from the production stable of Michael Bay. Marcus Nispel directed the remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Michael Bay is, of course, the Antichrist. Shot by Daniel Pearl, who shot both versions of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original one and the remake. The deal is that it's effectively the first, I think it's 3 or 4 movies, because as you'll know, Simon, for the Friday the 13th series, in the first Friday the 13th, it's not Jason, it's Jason's mum, right? Jason's mum.
I remember that.
Doing the killings as a, you know, Jason, fine. Get to the end of the movie, Jason comes out of the lake, but that's a dream sequence. Beginning of number 2, it is Jason now getting revenge for the killing of his mother, who was getting revenge for the killing of Jason, who apparently didn't die in the first one, as it turned out, and he's wearing a burlap sack over his head. By the time we get to number 3, Friday the 13th, 3D, interestingly enough, which was the best of the 3D effect movies of that period, of Jaws 3D and Friday the 13th 3D and Amityville 3D. That's when he gets the hockey mask on. So in this, they get the whole of the first movie out of the way before the titles. They get through the burlap sack and onto the hockey mask pretty quick, and then it's the usual stuff. People go missing. No one knows why. We all know it's Jason. Here's a clip.
I wanted to ask you if maybe you've seen somebody. My sister, she's gone missing.
Jane missing. She's dead.
What?
People go missing around here. They're gone for good. Outsiders come, they don't know where to walk. They bring trouble. They just want to be left alone. And so does he.
So does who? But man, please, so does who?
You see, my problem with all this is fairly straightforward. If you lived through the great slasher wave of the, you know, late 70s, early 80s, now living through it again seems terribly retrograde. You wonder why on earth these movies are being made again. And if it's simply to give people the buzz that we got when we were kids, we went to see Friday the 13th, because the thing with Friday the 13th was it was a nasty movie that was in mainstream cinemas. That was kind of what was interesting about it. Now, the remake is, because times have moved on, is nastier. So what you get is, again, according to the BBFC, you get sustained scenes featuring strong sex and nudity, strong language, sexualized nudity, strong sex references, drug references. So it's basically, it's all the stuff that you have to do to get an 18 certificate nowadays. And it romps along at a fair old whack, and it's written by the guy who wrote, I think he wrote Freddy vs. Jason, so it has some kind of heritage on it. And it's just like 20 years didn't happen. We're all back to the same stuff as before. It's all to do with people running around in sort of titillating states of undress. And
that sounds like Benny Hill.
Benny Hill with a hockey mask on. Now, I was trying to think while I was watching it, if you never sat through any of this stuff before, if this were the first time you were going to go, you know, meeting too much, would it satisfy you? And the honest answer to that is, I honestly think it wouldn't. I honestly think that a 16-year-old sneaking into an 18-rated movie, which was basically the original Friday the 13th play to, would go, well, what's all that about? It's not, I mean, it's not scary. It's shot in this kind of jittery way, so you can't really see what's going on. And when you can see what's going on, it's like, I mean, it's a real shame. The way that movies used to be made was so down and dirty and rough that they had a kind of edge to them because they looked like they were rough, cheap movies. It wasn't specs you were watching. It was something that was really happening in front of you. I mean, it was a great special effects maestro. It's just more of the same. It's just, you know, trotting out the old cliches. And funnily enough, I actually went into this quite excited. I went in thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe it's going to, because the original The 13th itself was not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but it did what it was meant to do. It was the date movie. It was the movie that, you know, you get to see with your mates, and they go, oh god, did you see that? Yo, it was yucky and bloody bloody blah, blah. But this, I just think it's despite the fact that there's more sex, more nudity, more shouting, more swearing, all that sort of stuff, the end effect is poof. And let me ask you a serious question. I really like, if anybody goes to see Friday the 13th and it's is actually scared at any time, please let me know, because my feeling is that there's nothing in it that's scary. And whatever else about the rubbishness of the first Friday the 13th, you did at least feel threatened by how scuzzy it was. This isn't even scuzzy.
All those Oscar predictions are going to be exclusively on Twitter in just a few moments.
Yeah, it's just a few moments.
Time. It's Wittertainment. If you go to twitter.com, you can follow us all week. And it's Wittertainment is the word that you're looking for. However, the movie of the week would be what?
Three Monkeys, you see. We haven't even got that far.
Well, what are we supposed to do about that?
We're going to start next week with Three Monkeys.
OK.
If you enjoyed that, why not visit the Kermode Uncut website at bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode, where you can find out more about what I think of that movies and watch a vodcast of the Mayo Kermode Film of the Week.
Thanks for downloading this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. And if you like this, you might also like this.
Fighting Talk.
I want to know what the greatest winter sport is. Right, a bit of a cold snap in the studio today, actually. Let's just get Mark and Tom out of the way here. Mark?
I think ice hockey is a great sport. We've had it briefly mentioned by Greg. It's really underrated here. Largely because our teams have all got stupid names, like Basingstoke Bison, for
Come
example.
On.
Or Nottingham Panthers.
For details of other 5 Live podcasts, go to the website bbc.co.uk/5live or go to the podcast directory in iTunes and search for 5 Live.